I'm Felina Jean, and this is Black Broads Abroad. I'm an international woman of leisure who said peace out to the United States in 2011, and I have not looked back except at this ass, honey. Since then, I've lived on 4 continents with travel to over 40 countries. Along my journey, I've come to know some very compelling Black women from all over the world who also said fuck you to their comfort zones. I created this podcast to inspire Black women in the diaspora to take risks and live their very best lives. Pierre Garcia is a lifelong educator born and raised in Trinidad, but moved to England as a teenager. After finishing high school, she went on to university in England and studied psychology and sociology. Unfulfilled with her job situation in the UK, she left to pursue a career as an international educator. Pierre has taught in England, Czech Republic, Korea, and most recently, Malaysia. Welcome, Pierre.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking out some time in your schedule. So I'll give a little bit of backstory to how we came into one another's orbit. I think it was back in 2012-ish. Yeah, like 2012. We were both living in Korea. I'm not sure how we actually met, but I do remember as I was coming in, you were going out. I remember going to your birthday party, but one of the things I remember, and you don't remember this, but I will never forget it. When you left me salt fish and ackee.
Yeah, you reminded me that. And I was like, I would remember that for sure if someone was giving it to me. But yeah, I don't remember, but I'm so, so happy that I went to the place that to go.
Yeah, I don't think there would be too many people in Korea that really would have appreciated IKEA saltfish, so I appreciate that. And then you introduced me to one of my dearest friends, Whitney, and when I was transitioning from Korea to Qatar, so that was magical. So I'm happy that you remain in my orbit. Thank you for scheduling some time today. So, okay, you just actually had a COVID test. You recently went back home to, like, literally, like, 10 minutes ago. So, it seems like you were at home for summer break in the UK, and you've come back to Malaysia. What has Malaysia been like amidst this COVID crisis?
Malaysia's been pretty good, actually. I would say within Asia, it was probably one of the slower starts because you would see other countries starting to do things. And over here, I was kind of like, are we going to get in on this or what? But once they did start, it was like really on point pretty much. They kind of put things in place, like rules and regulations in place that would still allow some freedoms, but then when people weren't really following those, they took away those freedoms. So things like exercising outside, we were no longer able to do. And even in your condo complex, like even if you couldn't go to the park, you at least had like the condo area where you could just go for a walk or exercise outside, but then they stopped that as well. So things like that, and then people were fined, people were arrested, so you kind of knew that there were repercussions to not following the rules, you know. So I don't think like many people were breaking the rules, but I think people were just like testing the waters to see what would be allowed and wouldn't be allowed. Mm-hmm. But generally most people will just like, you know, find out what we could and couldn't do and follow it, because I think everyone was just very mindful of the impact of not doing that.
Wow. So you're currently in quarantine, correct?
Yes, that's correct. I'm on my last day. I'm so happy.
Congratulations. Congratulations.
Freedom comes. Okay. Freedom is coming tomorrow.
Look, your quarantine looks lit. Where they have your accommodations, we'll get into all of that living in Malaysia. But I kind of want to take it back just a bit to provide some context for your trajectory. So you're originally from Trinidad and you moved to England as a teenager.
What were your early years like and your initial transition as an expat to England at a young age?
I would say it was quite difficult because this was the first time I was really living with my mom. So I grew up with my grandparents in Trinidad. My mom went to Saudi to work to provide for us, basically. There was a recession in Trinidad and options were slim. My mom's a nurse and, they came recruiting and she went over there too. She had just finished building her house and, was just trying to take care of that debt. So she went over there and I grew up with my grandparents. I mean, I would see her every year, I guess. But moving to England was the first time we really lived together. So things were, I would say, rocky between us. We argued a lot because, I'm a teenager and I'm thinking I know things. And then this is my mom, but, it's not someone that I really knew. And now she's telling me what to do. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense, Yeah, there was a bit of conflict there, and then things like really missing my friends, really be feeling disconnected to the mindset of the kids I was now interacting with in London, because like in Trinidad, like respect for authority and elders and stuff like that's a really, really big deal. It's probably shifted a little bit now, but I got to school in England and like kids are like talking back to the teachers, they're wearing makeup, pulling their skirts up so it's short, and I was just like, what is happening? Like I just couldn't like connect. I just couldn't understand that kind of behavior. And actually it was so far from anything that I grew up with, and I was wrong. I just couldn't really deal with, like, I wasn't on board with it either, because I'm like, that is your teacher. How can you talk to her like that, But it was difficult between the home stuff, the social circle, or very, very smallly. I had a couple of friends who were also like, their parents were from other countries. So one was Zimbabwe and one was Kurdish. So they had a bit of a different home life, so their behaviors reflected that, So we connected, still friends with them to this day. So between, the school environment, the home environment, and then the weather, it was a lot, actually. It was a big adjustment to deal with living there. And eventually the love of London came, and I do love it. I go back and I enjoy myself when I'm there, but that definitely took time. It wasn't like, yay, I love it here.
How old were you when you relocated to London from Trinidad?
I was 14 and I was just about to
Oh,
turn.
okay. Very formative years. Okay, so fast forward just a little bit. After high school, you went on to uni and you studied psychology and sociology. What was your first job after university?
My first job straight out was actually as an admin assistant at an insurance broker's. I graduated the year of the recession. And I think,
Oh, wait, was London's recession 2008 as well? Okay,
So that like, in addition to just, narrowing the job market, I was also somewhat vague about what I wanted to do still at that stage. So between the two of those things, I was like, okay, I just need to, find a job for right now. And so I went to this temp agency and started working there. And then I also did some work, kind of like part-time at a sexual health charity. So I was doing those two things for a couple of years straight out of university. But at this point, I already knew that I wanted to leave London. It was just prolonging what I felt was going to come. But yeah, probably out of uni, I was like, I am ready to not be here. That's where this started.
And yeah, it seems like your mother kind of led with an example of leaving home and becoming an expat and doing things sort of outside of the box, if you will. So Obviously, you arrived at an impasse at a particular juncture in your early career. What was it that made you say, hey, F this, I'm moving to Korea to teach English?
Well, like I said, I was kind of just over London. I just wanted a change of scenery. There was nothing in particular. I could just feel an unrest. And I wanted to leave London, and I considered going back to Trinidad, but then I felt like it would be not a step back, but I felt like it was going to be too small and maybe almost claustrophobic, but it was in the back of my mind that that was an option. And I was like, oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go travel the world because that's a thing and I want to do that, you know. I had done some traveling during my 4 years at university, and I thought, yes, I'm going to go do this. And then immediately after that thought, I was like, but you don't have any money. So how do you plan to do it? So while I was looking at round the world travel, like, you know, teaching English abroad came up a lot. It's not something I had ever thought about. Being a teacher, I was just like, that's a tough job. Like, I, you know, it's not something that I had considered either. But I started looking at options.
Probably especially after your experience with the with the local Londoners. They're disrespectful teachers.
Yep. So exactly. That would not help the case of someone considering being a teacher. I started looking at what options there were, looking at jobs and what kind of qualifications they were looking for. And one thing that came up was a CELTA, which is an intensive course you can do to teach English. So I did that and immediately started looking for jobs online. I just started, you know, typing in, okay, teaching jobs, you know, teaching English abroad basically is where it started. And without, you know, any deep qualification, like, you know, a degree in education or like a master's in English or anything like that, your options, at least at the time, were quite limited. So to find places that just took you with a CELTA and without experience, Korea came up a lot. It was like, okay, there are places, because I at that stage I was like, who will have me? Somebody please take me. You know, so I signed up to a few different agencies, and then I would search on websites myself, and I applied. Actually, the job that I took was the first one, the first interview that I did, and they pretty much offered me the job like straightish away, and I was like, yes, okay, wow, let's do this. So and that's how I ended up in Korea. I had applied to do the JET program in Japan as well, and actually Japan is where I wanted to go. But I didn't make
what is JET? What does JET stand for? Is it like another English program or English teaching programs?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I didn't make it onto that one. And so that's when I was like, okay, let's see where else I can have for options. And so, the job in Korea came up and I was like, yep, let's go. I'm ready to do this.
Yeah. So was there any trepidation about, like, cause I mean, from the outside looking in, having lived in Korea, I know that there are world-class cities and, you know, it's very advanced. But having not been there, was there any trepidation about Korea? Because it's not necessarily the first place people think of in terms of, I think I'd relocate there.
I think because it was just the option that seemed to be the one that would work for me, that's where I knew I was like, this is going to be the one. I knew nothing about Korea, nothing. Like, even when I was preparing for my interviews, like, I was like, okay, I need to start learning about this country, because if they ask me, why would you like to come to Korea? Or what fascinates you about this country? I don't know. So I had to like do a lot of research and just really start prepping for what questions I thought they might ask if they did take it down that route. So there wasn't a great amount of apprehension, I think probably because I just really didn't know much about the country. So there was like nothing scammy in that way. And I was like, I'm getting this job, so let's go. And I had spoken to one tip, and I will, if there's anyone who's interested in teaching English or who does it, one thing that I always do with every job is I ask them to speak to one of their teachers. So either a current teacher or a past teacher. And I did that with this job. So I think that that was really, really helpful because the guy I spoke with, he he really put a lot of like fears to rest. Like it was very easy to talk with him. He was going to be a colleague of mine, and he knew the our boss. You know, he knew her fairly well, and she had just started this language center. So she was really like excited and very, you know, really wanting it to work. And it was a very, very small language center. So it seemed like a really like intimate community, like, you know, workforce, work team, let's say. So, so yeah, talking with him made me feel comfortable with the idea of like accepting the job and going over there. That helped as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think a lot of, well, you know, one of the things that shocked me about living in Korea, I mean, obviously it's a very homogeneous society, but they do recruit people from all over the world for various jobs. So there's a lot of teachers, and then there's all the U.S. military bases. So there are a fair share of expats. So your ingratiation into Korea, were you teaching at a Hagwon, like a private academy, or a public school?
Yeah, I was at a Hagwon, so the okay. private language center, like the after school kind of place.
Right. Okay. So how long were you in Korea, and what was your social life there as a Black person? Like, what was your social life like?
So I was there for a little over 2 years, and social life, let's see. So at that point, I think I've changed a lot in terms of being able to strike up conversation and things like that. That's just not something that I would do. I was very sociable, but not someone who would be like, you know, in a restaurant or in a cafe or bar and be like, oh, hey, where are you from? Like, that just was not me at all. And the idea of that was just, I was never comfortable with that idea. Actually, it was very difficult at first, very, very difficult, because during the work week, it was fine because I was super occupied and, you know, we were there all day long. But the weekends were particularly tough because my two colleagues, so there were four of us, two foreign teachers and two local teachers. One of them, this lady, Claire, she had a family. So on the weekend, she would be with her family. She was about to have a baby and stuff like that. Then the other Korean teacher, Tae, he worked on the Air Force base at the weekend. So he would be busy. And then Andrew, his girlfriend lived out just outside of town. So she would either come to visit or he would go hang out with her in her city. So I, like, work people were like gone. So then that kind of left whichever other expats were around. And like I said, I wasn't really like outgoing in the way of like, hey, anybody around, anybody want to hang out? Like, so there's an expat group, like it's still the main
one. Brothers and sisters. Well, brothers and sisters, South Korea.
I wasn't even another one. That, you know, I joined that near the end of my time in Korea, so that's to tell you how I missed out. Like, I missed a boat there. But no, it was a group for local people, like local expat in the city we were in. And so sometimes you would see people posting like, "Hey, we're gonna go to Suseongdong for drinks. Anybody want to come?" and stuff like that. But
oh my gosh, you gave me flashbacks.
Suseongdong, stand up. My connections with people was either through like tagging along to some of those things, or if there was somebody new in the group who would put a general post out like, "Hey guys, I'm new to Gunsan, anybody like free?" I would message the person privately like, "Hey, I'm like fairly new here too, or I know someplace great for lunch. Do you want to meet up? In terms of being a Black woman, I don't feel like it particularly had a huge impact where I was. I think that because it was a smaller town or city, people would stare at foreigners anyway, right? So all the foreigners right. were being stared at regardless.
Right.
Never felt like it was, or if it was because I was Black, it didn't stand out in that way because I couldn't tell if they were staring just because I was a foreigner or because I was a Black foreigner. But I definitely stood out because particularly at that time, there weren't any others, like not that long after, there was one other Black teacher, but there weren't very many. But on the Air Force base, of course, there was a mixture of people of different ethnic backgrounds. So I'm sure that people in town would have seen, you know, some Black people around, but
a few, yeah.
Like it was something that was holding me back in any way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you in terms of, I mean, to provide some context, Kwunsan is south of Seoul, right? Yeah, south of Seoul. It's about 2.5 hours away from Seoul. So we weren't in like the big city. I called it bumblefuck Korea because, yeah. I mean, I will hardly ever see Black people until I started making friends on the military bases.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also the point that she made about the stairs, I feel like, you know, in China, for instance, the stairs are voyeuristic in a way.
Yes.
But I felt like the stairs in Korea were just curiosity.
Oh, it wasn't... see what you mean. Okay, okay.
Do you well, see I what would, I mean?
Yeah, I would consider that a bit of voyeurism in itself. I thought that's what you meant. But yeah, curiosity and... I completely agree. I never felt like there was any malice or disdain, or I really just felt like people were looking because they were like, whoa, who is this?
Ah,
where did
they come from? Right. Yeah. Right. Oh, Korea. I mean, you know, a fun fact about Korea is like it's about the size of Colorado, but the alcohol consumption, they consume like so much alcohol. I think it's like one of the highest of like any developed nation.
I did not know that until I went there and I was like, oh, okay, because I just had it down as this like very, very conservative place, which it is in some respects and then really not in some others.
And some of, yeah, it's so true. Like, yeah, I, you know, I'm not a drinker, but like that soju, my principal took me out for drinks. That's a whole other situation. Like drinking is so communal. And if you don't go out with them to drink or to eat, it's like, it's really seen as disrespectful. But yeah. Girl, them Koreans will drink you under the table. I was like, you know, this is a lot like home. It's a liquor store on every corner. It's a church. Okay. And they fry the hell out of some chicken.
Oh my gosh. Still the best fried chicken I love Korean fried chicken. Oh my god. But what you were saying, going out for drinks with your boss, like when my boss with your principal, my boss, when we went out for drinks and, you know, we're having dinner and drinks and shots of soju, of course, and I didn't particularly like the taste of soju, so I would usually do like 3/4 shot and then just put a dash of Coke or a dash of Sprite on the top. And she saw me doing that and she was not impressed. She was She's like, no, you can't drink it like that. I was like, if you want me to drink it, this is how it's gonna be. She's like, okay, fine, but you should learn how to drink it properly.
Girl, mine was bad. Like my principal took me out for drinks. He had a band. I didn't even know he was my principal for the first couple of weeks because he was so cool. But like, well into the school year, he took me out for drinks, and this was like really my first go round with soju. So I was like taking them like shots, and it sneaks up on you. Yes. And I think I must have had about 4 or 5. Mind you, I'm not a drinker. I'm a smoker. But, you know, finding weed in Korea, that's a whole other story. But, oh, my goodness. I threw up all over that man's shoe.
Did you? Oh my.
He was holding my ponytail and I threw up on the man's shoes. Luckily, the bar wasn't far from my house. He walked me home. And my birthday's near Christmas. So it was like, my birthday's the 23rd. And I think, I don't know if we had school the next day, but I remember the next time I saw him, I was like so embarrassed. And he was just like, nothing ever happened.
It's just another day.
I remember, I'm having flashbacks. Just such a juxtaposition because you're now living in a Muslim country, Malaysia. And so, you know, I went to Qatar straight after Korea. But I remember having like meetings after school and like, you know, maybe, you know, they'd start, you know, fixing food and beverages, you know, for the staff meetings. And there would be soju, there would be makgeolli. These are alcoholic Korean beverages. Rice wine available at the after school meetings. And sometimes they would get it popping before the bell even rang. Oh my goodness. Oh, Korea. That was such an interesting experience for me. Okay. So you've moved past Korea because I think you left in 2012 or 2013.
Yeah, and the very end of 2013, yeah.
Okay. So after Korea, you went on to Czech Republic. How long were you there and what were you also teaching in Czech Republic?
I was there for a bit under, about 7 months. So for the school year, it was September to June. And I was replacing a teacher. So I got there around maybe November, I think. And then I finished in June. So under a year. And yes, I was teaching for another language center there. It was it's under an umbrella. It's called International House, which they have schools all over the world. And my sister had just done her CELTA with them. And she was like, oh, you should check out their website. And, you know, they have loads of jobs and stuff. So that's how I ended up even bothering with them because they were one of the few sites that you have to like register an account and do all of this. And I was like, oh, I ain't got time for that. So I'm just going to look at all these sites where I don't have to do that. But afterwards, you know, like I had a couple of other friends who suggested International House and I was like, okay, fine. I will invest the 3 seconds of creating the account then. So, I worked for that school, but it was really interesting because, so in Korea, I worked at the Hagwon. I was just there only and I was teaching kids who were from about 5 up to about 10 years old. I did have a couple of students who were like 13, 14, but that didn't happen very often. But in the Czech Republic now, it was adults included. So this is like my first time teaching. Yeah. So before that, I taught in England. So when I finished in Korea, I went traveling for a bit because you know how time off there was just, well, in a Hagwon, working as a Hagwon teacher, there's like no time off. So
when it's different from the public schools.
Yes, yes. So okay. I had like 10 days a year, like, and then like, I mean, like holidays. Yes, it was mad.
That's very different from the schools. Yeah, okay.
Very, very different.
Whoa.
So
you definitely deserve that time off.
Right? That's what I said to myself, too. I was planning. I was like, when this job is over, I am going traveling. So I had gone traveling. And then when I got back to England, I worked in the south of England for maybe about 2 months. They just hired me for a couple of courses. These kids had come over from like Russia and from Italy to do. So we were doing like exam prep for them. And even then that was new to me because they were teens, like there were some young ones, but mostly mid to late teens. And that was completely new for me. And also now I'm like having to really dive into English. Like in Korea, we didn't teach much grammar and things like that. It wasn't that deep, but now I'm having to really help the kids understand this, like this as a language, you know, so that was completely new. So I got used to, you know, young adults, let's say, and then when I moved to the Czech Republic, I now had adults, young adults, teens, and a couple of younger kids. But it was really, really, it was wonderful, actually, because I just hadn't been exposed to that before, to working with adults, to teaching them. And it's vastly different, of course, from teaching kids. So, like, the topics you can talk about, the level, of course. And then also one cool thing was that you can hang out with them depending on, you know, what kind of rules your school might have or you know, whatever the company might stipulate. But my students, they were like, oh, like they would give me recommendations about places to try out, places to like eat and drink. Or they would say like, oh, let's like, do you want to meet up for dinner and things like that. So that was like, that was brand new. And I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, I really enjoyed that. So I taught at companies on site of the school. And then I also had a couple of other places to go. So I used to go to one primary school to teach, I think, once a week. And then I used to go, they had one client who paid to have her kids taught at home. So I would go to their home to do that. So I was moving around a lot, getting on the tram, getting off the tram or the bus, and just admiring the architecture. So that was like, it was never too much of a chore unless I was a bit late and I had to hustle. But apart from that, it was just nice to like just be walking around the city and just admiring all the buildings and stuff. So yeah, it was a very different environment from my work in Korea.
Wow, it's so interesting. So you've been, you've lived in Trinidad, you've lived in England, you've lived in, Czech Republic is like Central Europe, Eastern Europe, yeah. Central Europe. Central.
Don't let them hear Central. You say Eastern Europe, girl.
Oh, gosh, I know. yeah, nobody wants to be mistaken for a Polish person. I don't know why they have, anyway. And so now you've moved to Malaysia. So, gosh, this is such a gamut of experiences. You're literally like a five-time expat. So... Now you're in Malaysia. When did you move to Malaysia? It seems like you've been there for a while now. And are you teaching English or some other subject there?
Right. So I have been here for a while. This is the longest I've stayed in any country since moving abroad. So I moved here in 2015. And my five-year anniversary is coming up soon, later in October. Yeah, end of October. So yeah, it's the longest I've stayed anywhere, and I am still teaching English. I mean, there have been times where, even in Korea, when I was teaching English, we taught like social studies, science, math, and things like that. So, you know, mm-hmm. there has been a mixture of topics that I've taught, or subjects rather, that I've taught. But yeah, this has all been teaching English. That's been like the main focus, just with different, you know, subject areas or topics and things like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, teaching English is a lot of people's first entree into moving abroad. And there are like people like you that found it like as a viable career path for themselves. What do you like most about like being in Malaysia? Because you've been there 5 years. It seems like you've gotten your bearings and you're comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what to expect when I was coming to Malaysia. Again, like actually everywhere that I've lived, it was pretty much unplanned, pretty much just like looking at what jobs are available. Oh, that seems interesting, and applying. And so moving to Malaysia, one thing that caught my attention was how diverse the population here is. So you've got Malay people, you've got Chinese people, and you've got Indian people, and these are all Malaysians. So there's like mm-hmm. Chinese Malaysian, Indian Malaysian, Malay Malaysian. And so mm-hmm. it was the first time I'd really come across a place that was like this, that reminded me so much of Trinidad, where we have like different races, different religions, and just kind of hanging out together and celebrating everybody's, you know, everybody's different traditions and religious holidays and things like that. So that stood out to me. And moving here, I find that it's nice to have that, even though I would say overall Malaysia presents itself as a very harmonious place in that respect. But just like Trinidad, where we're, I would say we are more harmonious and more like, because in primary school, you learn about like Diwali, you learn about Eid, you celebrate with your friends, you go to their house, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I found that here, it's not quite as unified as they present. And that's not to say that there aren't like crossovers and things like that. I'm not saying that at all, but it's just not what I expected. And so that made me a little bit like sad about that. But generally, it's just really nice to be in a place where there's so many different backgrounds, religions, celebrations, things like that. And I have friends in all of those realms. So I don't necessarily feel like I'm missing out because I'm only friends with, you know, this race. I'm only friends with this religion or anything like that. So that's one thing that I love about being here. And one thing that comes with that is the holidays.
Oh, wait, okay. So are you at a, I don't know what the Hagwon equivalent in Malaysia would be. Are you at like a proper like K-12 school or middle school? Or are you at a language center?
So when I moved here, the job I was doing was at a language center, yes. And mm-hmm. I worked there for 4 years. But now I work at an international school. I started there earlier this, in the middle of this pandemic, actually. I started in April.
So congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, it's exciting and it's definitely brand new. I have not been in a school environment like this before. I'm really looking forward to what comes with that. Like, I feel like they're like all day long, they're, you know, learning all the different subjects, they're, you know, learning and growing and coming of age and all that kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to that experience. It's going to be very different.
It's an IB school, International Baccalaureate School.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's great. There's yeah. Because, you know, a lot of people, when they are looking to move abroad, like I just previously mentioned, like getting an English teaching job is sometimes the easiest way. And there's levels and there's different like types of remuneration packages for right. all kinds. And so, you know, there's language schools, there's public schools, and then there's international schools, which where you are now. And usually when you're at a international school, the remuneration packages are better, the benefits are a bit yeah. better, and it's like a different demographic of children that you're teaching. Congratulations. I'll be happy to hear about what your experience is at your first international school post. I know the holidays are better, girl.
Well, I meant like even before this international, because I only started here in April. I just mean generally in Malaysia, because there will be holidays for Hindus, holidays for Buddhists, holidays for the Malay, you know, for there's Muslim holidays. Then you've got things like the Sultan's birthday, the King's birthday.
Oh, y'all got all the holidays. All of them.
All of them.
That's one of the, I think that's one of the great things about being an educator, especially overseas, is the amount of time that you get off. Because, you know, I was calculating at one point, I was like, you know, this is really a part-time job. We work like 188 days in the year. And then if you're like in a dope location, you know, the cost to travel is it's not cost prohibitive. So, you know. Mm-hmm. There's so many places to go when you're overseas, which kind of leads me to my next question. How would you rate your quality of life in each of the places that you have lived as an educator versus, you know, living in the UK?
Okay. overall, like, if I just had to go straight down the line, I would say hands down, quality of life is better outside for me, for the experience that I was having. I feel like in the UK, it's particularly London, you know, it can be quite challenging to get a decent work-life balance and have a good disposable income where you just you feel comfortable, you know. I feel like there's always something that needs to be paid. And if you're not in a very well-paying job, you might just find it a bit trickier to enjoy just being, you know. So yeah, I feel that I can live quite comfortably, like the kind of home that I have. I feel like disposable income is better. And then, of course, you have the weather on top of that. Overall, like even in Korea, where my time off was basically stripped away, that was a really good opportunity for me to make money, save money, clear debt. Because my disposable income, like the package that I got there, you know, rent was included, bills were very utility bills were always very, very low. And so it's very easy to like get rid of some debt, make some savings, and also like eating out, going out for drinks, it just wasn't expensive at all. Whereas this is just not something I personally would do a lot in London. And even now, like in Malaysia, it's very affordable to eat out. Drinking is a bit pricier. Like drinks here are expensive when you compare to other Southeast Asian countries. They're not that far off from what I would be paying back home for a cocktail, let's say. You know, like it's probably like £1 or £2 cheaper than what I would pay back home. But in terms of like eating out, experiences like taking this tour or visiting and staying in this nice hotel, like it's just things that I feel are more reachable for me. I'm trying to shift this, by the way, and move beyond it being Asia allowing me to do that, because I would love to be able to go home and not like wince at the price of things, you know. But yeah, overall, it's definitely, I feel more like I have a more well-rounded life, and there's definitely more balance in things, and I feel comfortable with like being able to have fun, being able to do lots of nice self-care things, like go for a massage, get mani-pedis, go for a facial. I don't mean like every week or, you know, but I could do that without having to think and without having to plan it. Like, oh, I think, you know, water, I can go do that. You know, I can do it fairly comfortably. So in that respect, for me, like I said, different people have different experiences of what they might have access to in a place like London, let's say. But for like a teacher, let's say, since I am a teacher, I would say your lifestyle is going to be very different.
Right.
I've got a couple of friends who've just moved back. They were teaching at the language center I was at, that I just finished at the end of last year. They moved back about 2 years ago, and I met up with them on this trip that I just went back on, and finance was one of the main things because they are teaching, but to be fair, they are like, they got their teacher qualification. So I think, you know, once they get, I'm thinking once they dive deeper into the role, the pay will reflect that. But yeah, I think that's one thing that they're finding quite tricky, adjusting to really having to cut back on quite a few things and be very mindful of like eating out or like going out for drinks and things like that. So it was interesting talking about. Yeah,
there's, and for those, I'll put some notes in this episode, but could you just mention maybe some of the organizations or like sites that you submitted your applications on to procure employment overseas as a teacher?
What was
your process like? I mean, everybody's is different. I know I can mention for those teachers, anybody that's listening that is a qualified teacher in terms of having a degree in education or something like that, then. So I know, what is it called? I went through SIT, Search Associates. I went through Search Associates There's another one called ISS, International School Services. And those are specifically for teachers who have their teaching qualification. And so the remuneration packages are very good, and they help to get you jobs at international schools. I know for Korea, what is that program called? EPIC?
Oh, EPIC, yeah.
What does it stand for?
I do not know. Something, I don't know.
Yeah. But if you're interested, I mean, they're always hiring teachers. EPIK, you can Google EPIK. Are you familiar with like any other like websites where people might be able to submit their credentials for moving overseas?
It stands for English Program in Korea. There we go.
EPIK. There we go.
So I never really looked at so let me just say what my process looked like. I would literally go online and type in teaching English abroad, right? And
okay.
Then see what would come up. So some of the sites, so I don't know if it still exists. I might just have a quick look now. Dave's ESL Cafe, I think it was called. Yeah, that was fantastic for finding lots of jobs all over the world. Dave's ESL Cafe. And they have these job boards. So they have like one dedicated to Korea, one for China, and then one that's just generally international. And then on there, they even have like other resources. They have forums and things like that. So it's super duper like it's all encompassing because they've got like lesson plans and things like that. So that's one that I use. That's not how I found the first job, but Dave's ESL Cafe is pretty good. TeachAway, I think
Teach
is
Away, quite popular. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What else? What else have I used? Oh,
I've heard of TIE. I've heard of one called TIE.
TIE
online.
I'm not online.
I haven't used it, but I've been on that website. I've not procured employment from there, but I've heard of it. I didn't mean to cut you off. What was the other that you suggested?
TEFL. There's TEFL.org, I think it is. Yeah. So there's TeachAway, there's TEFL.org, and International House. International House is very good. Like I said, it's on like they've got branches all over the world, and they once you register, you can see like all their different job postings. If you are qualified and you're, again, not necessarily like looking at international schools, and British Council is also a pretty good option. They have a decent package too. I think like they offer like good payments and like home, like you get stuff for like accommodation and all that. So.
Right. And I mean, I know there's going to be, there is an influx of people who have renewed or a new interest in, especially leaving the divided states, honey, with our president. Boris ain't a whole lot better than Trump, but I still take him over Trump. But I want to give these free resources to people who might be interested in leaving their home countries. Most of the teaching jobs, I mean, they run the gamut. You could go from like, I don't know, something that's as little as like $24,000 to $28,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And that would be with your housing included. Do not accept a job that does not include your housing. Your transportation in terms of getting there is either paid for or reimbursed. That's on the low end. And then if you're, and that's just if you have like from an associate's degree or high school diploma to like a bachelor's degree without a teaching qualification.
Yeah.
And then you could earn, you know, you could earn six figures if you actually have a teaching qualification and you go through like Search Associates or ISS, which are paid. You have to pay for them. I think it's about $350. But it grants you entry into their international recruiting. They have recruiting like all over the world. So this is just tea for those in the audience that, you know, no matter what your professional background is, if you're just looking for like a quick get the F out of your home country, Teaching sometimes is the easiest entree into doing that. Okay. So what is the biggest lesson that you have learned about stepping outside of your comfort zone?
Do you know what? It's when people point it out that way, it hits me. But when I'm in it, I'm just in, like, I'm just moving and moving through it. But when people break down to me, like, oh, you moved here and you did this and you did that, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess that is a big deal, you know, like just rooting up and restarting. And it is challenging. It really is challenging. But I guess, like, in terms of stepping outside of your comfort zone, one time this really hit me like a ton of bricks. It was that fear is an illusion. It really is just an illusion. And the reward you get for either facing it or diving headfirst into it, the feeling of, even if it doesn't work out how you think it will, the reward you get for, one, facing it, and then two, what the outcome could be, or, like, regardless of if it's, you know, what you want. If you're open to learning lessons, then you know that there's no real, like, failure, right? So, I can't remember where, what I was doing, but it was something, and I was reflecting on the fact that I just did it anyway. I was really scared. It wasn't to do with, like, moving abroad, but it just reinforced that when I did it, I felt so good about doing it that was just enough to tell me not to be scared because the feeling of overcoming that, because you just feel proud of yourself for being brave. And then if it works out how you want, then it's working out how you want, you know? So definitely, like, you know, of course that doesn't mean, like, just dive in and don't do your research and whatever else, but just, you know, I think people listening to this will be smart enough to not do that. But yeah, just don't be scared. And if you are, talk to some people and they, like, people will help you. Like, do your research, you know, and be smart about who you're asking and how you're approaching them, but people will help you. Like, and people do want to help because, you know, if you are happy and you're living a fulfilling life and someone approaches you with the desire to want that, you would want that for them too. So reach out to people. Don't hear back from them, which that's happened to me too sometimes where I don't hear back. It's just, okay, fine. Like, something will happen. Something will come through. So yeah, don't be too scared. Like, it's okay to be scared.
Yeah.
Move past it.
We'll push past the fear. And that's also a very good point. Like, I don't know, when I first moved abroad to Brazil in, like, 2011, there were not, like, all of these expat communities online that you can tap into. There is a brothers and sisters group of every possible country you can't imagine. So if you are, you know, whatever country you're thinking about moving to, just go to Facebook and type in brothers and sisters of X country, and you'll find a community. So what is next for Peer, and where can people keep up with your journey on social media?
Next for me, well, stepping into this new role, I think I will just be riding the waves of that and seeing how things go at this school. I like the fact that they are connected. They're under an umbrella, and so there might be potential for me to go back to London and teach there under this umbrella. So, you know, there are things that I would like to pursue in terms of rooting down, and not necessarily for me to stay in one place, but at least to have some things in place that make me feel a bit more secure, I guess. Because this nomadic life is wonderful, but it's also nice to have, like, a little safety net sometimes. Maybe that's my age talking. Is this maturity and age happening here?
Roots are important. I got some roots in 2017, and it, you know, it made me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just made me feel a bit more settled.
Right. So, yeah, I will see how things unfold in this job and how I feel. It's weird because I thought that after the job that I finished in December that I would probably be leaving Malaysia and Penang Island where I live. But yeah, I realized that I just really liked. I realized I was actually saying something to people that I wasn't registering myself, which was that I was ready to move on from the company I was with, but I wasn't quite ready to leave Penang. But I was saying that, but in my actual processing, it was like, okay, that job's done. Now it's time to move to the next country. That's just the automatic way my mind was moving. And really, it was literally me saying it to someone, and I heard myself say, and I'm like, hang on, you're saying, you know, you're not ready to leave Penang, so why are you leaving? And that's when I decided to actually start applying to international schools, because prior to that, I just ruled myself out of them because of the kind of qualifications you typically need. So I never really explored it. But I think between my experience and now that, you know, there are schools that will take on an English language teacher, you know, for international students who aren't strong enough in their English. And so I did that. So, and then I started seeing opportunities at these international schools. So I was like, oh, fantastic, I can stay here. So even still being here is unexpected for me. So I can't quite say I will just remain open to what presents itself. There are some ventures that I, you know when you have an idea and there's something, you have a baby in your mind of like, oh, you know, this would be a great idea, or I might like to try this, but you're not quite there yet to ready to dive in. Is that whole fair thing that I was just talking about?
So is it an entrepreneurial venture?
Yes, exactly. So that's something that if I manage to conjure up the bravery that I was just speaking about, it's something that I would like to explore. So yeah, I think that over the next year, I will be spending time not only exploring this new role and settling into it, but also like getting a bit more serious and shaping together some ideas about what I want outside of just, you know, teaching English. Yeah. And
entrepreneurship is outside of leaving the divided states. It's the best life decision that I ever made. And I think, you know, having had both of us, you know, having experiences as expats, that prepares you for entrepreneurship, because you have to be able to pivot. You have to be able to make decisions. You know, you have to be able to think on the fly. You have to be able to kind of be mindful of like global landscapes, you know,
right.
But like for real, there was nothing that could have prepared me more for entrepreneurship outside of being an expat. I'm excited to see what you'll come up with, and I'm sure your venture will be just as successful as your moves in many countries. Thank you so much.
Shout out to our Patreon members for your support. If you too are interested in joining the Black Broads Abroad movement, you can follow us on social media, and that's BLACKBROADS. That's on Instagram and Facebook. And if you'd like to become a supporter on Patreon, you can do so on patreon.com/blackbroadsabroad.